This is BBC Radio 5 Live, available on the BBC Sounds app. Sunday Breakfast.
And we've been doing some longer explorations of issues that we thought have been interesting in the last few weeks. So we did a longer report into money laundering. We looked at the issue of addiction. We looked at reality TV last week. And this week we're asking, are we in danger of running out of water? And could that happen in the next 25 years? It might feel like an absolutely ridiculous question, but that warning came earlier this week from Sir James Bevan, the head of the Environment Agency. So, you know, he knows what he's talking about, but how can it be? How do we get our water? And if this is the case, how do we stop it running out? Questions we're going to try to get to the bottom of now. We find out that the planet still has the same amount of water, but that it's in the wrong places. And there's also some useful tips on what you can do in your own house to use less water. Have a listen.
After the sunniest summer in 30 years comes the drought. The Rivington Reservoir near Preston is one of many fast drying up as a water famine threatens Britain.
Let's face it, a lack of water in the UK isn't anything new.
To bring emergency supplies to outlying homes. Near Macclesfield, engineers start drilling operations to increase Cheshire's water supply.
That's a Pathé News report from 70 years ago.
Come on, Manchester, give Britain the lead.
And this is from 5 Live from last year.
Out in different parts of the country, the world this morning. Guy is in Salford. He'll be staying with us for the morning's Money News.
Yeah, morning, Rachel. The scorching temperatures mean water companies want us to cut down how much water we use, and hosepipe bans could be just a few days away.
So the question is, could this happen more in the future? The head of the Environment Agency really thinks so. Sir James Bevan blames climate change combined with population growth. Now, he's used phrases like existential threat and jaws of death when it comes to water shortages. Before we get solutions, let's get a bit of context. How much water is there? Here's NASA.
Earth is special because it has so much water. It's in the ground, forms big oceans, and it's in our atmosphere. It's also in living things. Your body is made up mostly of water. Water covers 71% of Earth's surface. And almost all of it, 96.5%, is salt water. Salt water has different kinds of salt in it, but it mostly has sodium chloride, the same salt we add to our food. Just 3.5% of the water on Earth is fresh water we can drink. And most of that fresh water, 68%, is trapped in ice and glaciers. A third of the fresh water is in the ground. We call it groundwater. The last 2% of fresh water is in the rivers, lakes, and streams. A very small amount is in our atmosphere, where it exists as water vapor. That's what clouds are made of. If you took all the water on Earth and put it together, it would be a ball 860 miles wide. That's a lot of water.
Let's just hear that again.
If you took all the water on Earth and put it together, it would be a ball 860 miles wide. That's a lot of water.
It's probably worth at this point explaining how that big ball of water gets in our taps.
I'm Gemma Eglinton, the Learning Coordinator at the London Museum of Water and Steam at Kew Bridge, and I welcome hundreds of school children to the museum to talk about the water cycle. So here goes. Of course, the water cycle goes round and round and round. So let's start where we know, which is when we have a glass of water, we drink it, and it turns into wee-wee. We do a wee, we flush it, and we flush it away with clean water into the underground pipes, and it heads to a sewage treatment centre. There, they separate it out, and they clean the water, not too much, just enough so that they can put it back into the rivers. If it's too clean, it's too sterile for the fish. So they put it back into the rivers, and it will head towards the sea. But at some point, the sun comes out, and it starts to evaporate into the sky. And when it gets there, condensation takes place, and it turns into white, fluffy clouds. Those fluffy clouds get heavier, and they turn a grey colour, and then you know it's going to rain, which is precipitation. So the rain could fall anywhere from mountains to the top of your umbrella. But let's say it falls into a river. And then we clean it again. So we clean it and we put it through rigorous layers of filtering, which can include a chlorine contact tank, ozone gases, and sand filtration. So a layer of algae on the sand actually catches out the nasties or the bugs and the bacteria and cleans it. then we're able to pump it off through the pipes towards people's houses. And incredibly, that's where we can pour the water into our glass and start the whole cycle again.
And it's not always been this easy to get water into a tap in the first place. Let's get our geek on.
So how many of us open a tap, fill a glass of beautiful, clean drinking water and think no more of it? Well, unless your name is John Butcher and you're self-proclaimed aqueduct anorak, you probably would take this for granted. And you've really got to look back a long way to see where the history of our water supply came from. We can take it right back to the Romans 2,000 years ago with the first aqueducts in the UK bringing water supplies into the cities such as Chester and places like Hadrian's Wall. Largely, it was lost after the Romans, and basically you were personally responsible for your own water. You go and fetch it in a bucket from a stream or river. 14th century came along and you got the monks and friars who developed water supply systems that they were willing to share. 16th century, you got public-spirited citizens who would fund water projects as an act of charity. And it was really the Industrial Revolution that really drove a demand for water and forced the hand of the cities to develop some massive water schemes that are still on the backbone of the UK's water industry today. Thinking of people like John Frederick Latrobe Bateman, who in 1848 developed the Longendale scheme into Manchester, which was the biggest in the world at the time. You see demand for water increasing right the way through to the late 1980s with new reservoirs developed, new sources developed to satisfy that demand. After the late 80s, it was the demise of the UK's manufacturing industry that actually saw the demand for water start to decline, even though personal consumption was rising. So that gave some comfort in the supply-demand balance. Also, the water companies were getting on top of leakage, and this was all adding to a relatively comfortable position. However, now we're faced with potentially climate change and the actual supply of water now becoming under threat again.
Currently, we use an average of 140 litres of water a day. But the Environment Agency boss, Sir James Bevan, wants us to use 100 litres. A severe drought forced people in Cape Town last year to limit their water consumption to 50 litres. So that's 11 gallons per person per day. The South African city looks set to be the first in the world where the taps would run dry. Priya Reddy is Director of Communications in the city of Cape Town.
Look, it got dangerously close. We had had 3 years of way below average rainfall. Things were looking quite dire. We certainly came close enough to having to switch the reticulation system off, which would mean switching the taps off, which means no more water would run out through your taps, and there would be central points at which you would come and fetch your water. So it certainly was something very unprecedented for any major city in the world.
What was the public reaction?
Initially, it was slow to understand the gravity of the situation, like these things often are. But when we were forced to announce a possible day zero in the future, and when we made very clear with the messaging that people would be able to avoid it if they reduce their consumption drastically. When people realized how drastic the situation was, then we saw a very quick change in behavior because, you know, there was this realization that if everyone didn't do their part, we were going to find ourselves in a very dire situation.
What were the reasons, and did the public understand those reasons, or were people like you and, you know, people in your kind of capacity getting it in the neck?
The city did come under a lot of criticism. The criticism was partly that we acted too late to get alternate water sources to augment our water supply. It wasn't necessarily a fair criticism because we couldn't have predicted how dire the situation would be and that there would be such low rainfall in that last winter season. We had always had plans for desalination and for groundwater extraction, but we had to accelerate those. So, yeah, you know, the city did take a reputational knock on this. Something we're still trying to fix. We also had, you know, knocks in other areas that affect our economy directly, like tourism, because it became an international story, the headline being, could be the first major city to run out of water.
Could it happen again?
The city is putting plans in place to ensure that it doesn't happen again. We have desalination plants that are about to go on stream. We have aquifers and we're digging into groundwater. We've also reduced the pressure management a lot, where in terms of the water pressure coming out of your taps. We have amazing leak repair technology so that we're not losing as much through leaks. We've put water management devices in households that were using too much water. So there's been a lot of intervention to make sure we never find ourselves in this place again.
But how much is it a wake-up call, you know, to the authorities, to the population, that we are living in times where this kind of thing isn't just a warning, you know, this is a reality now? And how much of a wake-up call has that been for everybody involved?
Look, save water is no longer just a nice-to-have. It is a fundamental lived reality that we need to practice all the time. And I do think that our relationship, Cape Town's relationship with water, is forever changed because of what we went through. We have turned the narrative from the first major city to possibly run out of water to the first major city that came that close and didn't. We were talking to the Deputy Mayor of Melbourne recently, and he mentioned that the city of Cape Town did in 6 months what it took Melbourne 12 years to do in terms of bringing down consumption.
So in the end, the rains arrived, people reduced their water, and day zero, as it was described, was avoided in Cape Town. But what about here in the UK? Let's hear some more long-term solutions. Onna van Loon is an expert in water security at the University of Birmingham.
The most important thing is creating awareness. Creating awareness that a water shortage can happen in the UK. We all think we're living in a wet country. We don't have to worry about drought. But we did have droughts before, and we will have them in the future. So it's really important that we understand that this is a possibility and we act towards it. So water companies don't want to upset people, so they say everything is fine, everything is under control. But when we create more awareness, people can start saving water earlier, which might prevent problems down the line, like hosepipe bends or worse.
We are talking about fundamental change in the way that people go about their everyday lives.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot around awareness and behaviour here. So first of all, being aware that water is an issue even in a wet country. And that, but then also the awareness that most of the water we are consuming is not the water we're actually drinking from the tap. It is the water we're also using in our gardens, our bathrooms, but also industrial processes require a lot of water. The plastic needs water to produce, but also agriculture is using a lot of water. So for one kilogram of beef, you need more than 15,000 liters of water. So being aware of that is a really big step towards changing our behavior. And it doesn't only save water in the UK, but it also, if you eat less meat, that would also save water elsewhere, where they even have less water available than here. So it is a very big problem. It's a very wide problem. But with all these small things that we can do, we can make a contribution and we can prevent serious water issues in the future.
And how can we, in the short term, prevent so-called day zero here in the UK? Well, Sir James Bevan, again from the Environment Agency, has this list of things we can all do.
Get a low-flush toilet. Take short showers, not deep baths. Use the most efficient showerhead. Get a water-efficient washing machine. Don't use your dishwasher until it's full. Turn the tap off when brushing your teeth. Don't water your lawn, it will survive.
So there you are, in danger of running out of water in the next 25 years. There's obviously things we can do about it, but that was the warning from the head of the Environment Agency this week. Thank you for your texts on that issue. We will try to get some of those before too long. But we've only got a minute left before 7 o'clock, and we haven't read a single First Hour Crew in the last half hour.